You're listening to WERA LP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous award-winning Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, DC and North Carolina film critic, and lover of film and TV. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at picturelockshow.com. Now, public relations is a tool that every filmmaker needs to have in their tool belt. To talk about her Teach Me PR 101 course, Leslie Green of Golden Life Ventures joins me on the show today. Writer-director Rob Rafferty also talks DMV filmmaking and about his experiment in multi-platform storytelling called Muck. But first, last week I talked about my cautious optimism for the new Power Rangers movie. So I have some interview clips with director Dean Israelite and actress Elizabeth Banks. That's all ahead on Picture Lock.
None of us really know each other.
We're all screw-ups.
But somehow, we were all in the same place at the same time when Billy found those coins.
Guys, check out how we glow.
I'm blue.
Oh, I'm black.
What?
I am.
No, you're not.
No. Do you feel weird?
We're strong.
Insanely strong.
The answer to what is happening to you is here.
You five are the Power Rangers.
Did I just hear you say we're Power Rangers?
Is this some kind of joke?
We're talking to a wall.
I was kind of expecting a little more.
So where were you last night?
Me and four kids found a spaceship buried underground. I'm pretty sure I'm a superhero.
Cool.
Pee in that cup.
Power Rangers were a legion of warriors. You must become those warriors.
It's just a hologram, like a video game.
That's a strong ass hologram.
Not a video game. No one meant to
have all that power. You were born for this.
Everything.
She is pure evil.
Alright, so that was the trailer for Power Rangers. Here's director Dean Israelite on reimagining the original show.
We always wanted to pay homage to the original show in terms of its spirit. And that's why I think what will be surprising is that it's all the same characters, but we've made them deeper and more complex and more nuanced, and we've pushed the emotion of it so it's funny, but it's also really heart-rendering, I think. And I then wanted to make sure that we created a world that was unique unto itself, that wasn't borrowing from the other superhero movies that, in the last 10, 15 years have been dominating. I thought that this had its own legacy and sort of deserved its own unique take and world. So we tried very hard to make sure that our design feels coherent within its own framework.
And what about the characters?
I think they all have a degree of an archetypical character to them. So Jason is the football star hero, but we've tried to turn each of these archetypes on their ear a little bit. So he's the fallen football hero. Kimberly is sort of the pretty girl, popular girl that has been ostracized from that group. Billy is someone who's invisible and lives in his own world and his own bubble and has never had friends. Zach is the kind of renegade, rebel, wild kid that has a really complicated backstory to why he separates himself from people. And Trini is this loner, quiet girl that when she begins to speak, she sort of reveals so much depth to what she's going through. And so they're all disparate. And when they begin to open up, they all realize that the teenage problems that they're facing are universal and that they can understand each other on a deep level.
Rita Repulsa was a fan favorite. How is she now?
Rita Repulsa is played by Elizabeth Banks, and she is out to find the Zeo Crystal, which is the source of all life on Earth, that is buried somewhere in their small town, Angel Grove. And with that power, she will be able to rule the universe, but in getting it, she will destroy all life on Earth, because life itself will evaporate from our planet. And she will stop at nothing to try and get it, and she sees these new Power Rangers as easy to defeat, because she's defeated Zordon's team millions of years ago, and they were the most experienced Ranger team.
In your opinion, what do audiences have to look forward to?
I think you look forward to a movie about real, relatable characters that go on a journey that is heartfelt, emotional, genuinely, but also fun and epic and spectacular. And there's just a great action adventure, and I think it's a good time at the movies. You'll come out feeling good.
And now we're talking with Elizabeth Banks. First question is, what made you want to be a part of this film?
I grew up on movies, you know, The Goonies or even Star Wars, where it was all about team building and groups and friends. And, you know, this sell on Power Rangers is like you get to fight bad guys with your friends. And I feel like that's what being young is all about, you know? Like the revolution of being young and figuring out how to sort of own your own power. I love that as a theme.
Growing up for me, this was a huge show. Do you like the modern spin that's put on it?
This movie feels really fresh. It feels very of the moment. And I think the young stars of the movie are all very, they're really interesting and multicultural. And I feel like they really represent sort of the energy of young people right now. And it's still about like a small town and big stakes and the end of the world, and you know, I love all of that, but it's also really just about, you know, young people finding themselves and like figuring out what their place is in the world.
Obviously, when you don the role of a beloved character, you want to make her your own, but how did you do that?
The original Rita Repulsa in the show, she was played by a few different actresses, but each of them really brought sort of a very arch sensibility, really broad, really big, a cackle, you know, crazy headdress and, you know, crazy outfits. And we wanted to keep a sense of that. Like, not so much the look of what she looked like, but the sense of someone who is larger than life, right? Who's big and broad and brassy and ballsy and takes no prisoners and just is very determined to win. And that was always Rita throughout the series. And I think it's that attitude that we tried to bring.
What do you think audiences can look forward to?
It's so entertaining. It's really fun, great sense of humor. And then also, it's kind of emotional. I think it really like gets you. There's a lot of emotionality in the movie and some really great performances. And then you're being sort of taken on a ride, which is, I think, why you go to the movies, you know? Why you sit in a theater with all those people around you and have that communal experience is because you're sort of being blown away by what you're seeing on screen.
And Power Rangers is out this weekend in theaters. You can check PictureLockShow.com for my review.
Hi, my name is Ella.
Hi, my name is KJ.
And you're listening to
Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I'm really excited to talk with my next guest. She's the founder and CEO of Golden Life Ventures, LLC. She has a diverse background that expands across a variety of industries, which includes travel, public relations, and entertainment. When I first met Leslie Green, she was the director of communications for the Office of Motion Picture and Television Development for the government of the District of Columbia. Since then, she has struck out on her own with Golden Life Ventures, and I'm so excited to have you on the show, because usually you're kind of like the liaison, because you know, people would come on Picture Lock, but now we're talking about you, Leslie Green. Welcome to Picture Lock.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on this show, Kevin, and it's been some time since we last worked together.
But it has.
I'm glad we got a chance to reconnect and just to be here with you guys. So I'm
yeah, most definitely. Now I gotta say, you know, I'm semi jealous, but really happy for you. I mean, I think a lot of people in this day and age definitely want to get out of the rat race and actually kind of start their own thing. And sometimes that's hard to do, but you found a way to do it. And so I definitely would love to kind of talk about that. But let's kind of get a little history lesson, if you could. Just talk a little bit about, you know, the time that you had while you were working at the D.C. Film Office.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started the D.C. Film Office, which was at the time the D.C. Office of Motion Picture and Television Development, back in, I think it was January of 2011, and I came there with some experience in PR from an agency perspective. I had worked previously for communications agency and did issues-based work, meaning working with foundations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the UN Foundation on programs that help to publicize and meet the needs of certain issues that were happening. And so I came to the film office very excited because I was now combining that background of PR and public relations and communications with my love of entertainment. And so at the film office, I served as the director of communications, and I really wore a lot of hats, but the one that I'm most proud of is developing a program called the Filmmaker of the Month and Location of the Month, but specifically Filmmaker of the Month, where I highlighted a different filmmaker from the District of Columbia who was really making a difference and doing some great work and really may not have been able to do or get the type of publicity that they really wanted. And so, you know, we did a feature on our website. We did, of course, a huge social media promotion and ultimately a filmmaker's luncheon that allowed them to network and really communicate with some of the other filmmakers in the area.
And, you know, you talk about how highlighting their work, I think that's something that's really important. And I think that's something like, you know, for filmmakers, you know, going into film festivals and being able to get accepted, official selection, just to put that on, you know, a film that you have, that means a lot. It's a nice feather in the cap, but it also kind of, I hate to say, like, I now call you filmmaker, but it kind of legitimizes you. And so have something like that, you know, in the district, I mean, shoot, I wanted to move into the district just to try to be a filmmaker of the month, because it does help to kind of expose those filmmakers to an audience that they might not have reached. But it also kind of just helps to, as I said, bring just a little bit of legitimacy to it. So, you know, first we got to thank you for that, because that's awesome.
Absolutely.
And I guess maybe I got to thank you, too, because sometimes like that's I'd peruse Filmmaker of the Month. Oh, let me get in touch with this person and bring them on the show. So
yeah.
There's so many ways that it could go. So during your time, you know, at the film office, I guess you kind of talked about how that was one of your favorite programs. What's one of your favorite memories? Because, you know, there's so many people and there's so many productions that come through D.C. What's one of your favorite memories?
Oh, I have to tell you, with no hesitation, my favorite memory was getting to meet Spike Lee. He was there shooting a commercial, and it was actually probably one of the first 2 months of my time there in the film office. And, I was excited to meet him. And then, you know, he, of course, in the controversial way that he does, he brings up Marion Barry, right? And he's like, you know, I don't understand why folks are so forgiving of Marion Barry. And of course, being the opinionated and outspoken person that I am, you know, having been a friend of Marion Barry, who's good friends with my mom, and, you know, he just did so much for this city. And most people who don't live here don't really understand what he did for the city at the time. And so, of course, you know, we got into a little tit for tat. But at the end of that conversation, I actually made him smile and we took a picture together. And that was one of my most fondest memories of that moment is being able to have you know, a tit for tat with Spike Lee. And at the end of that conversation, him actually kind of giving me a heads up, like, huh, you kind of held your own there in that conversation.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the woman that was able to go pound for pound with Spike Lee and make it out unscathed, Leslie Green, the founder and CEO of Golden Life Ventures. That's an awesome story. I love it. All right, Leslie. So let's talk about Golden Life Ventures. What exactly does your company do?
That's a great question. So we first started off as a travel consultancy because one of my other passions, as you mentioned at the top of our conversation here, is that my background really kind of expands across a lot of industries and passions of mine. I'm what you call a multi-passionate entrepreneur. So that business really started off as a travel consultancy. And then once I left the film office in June of 2015, I decided to use my skill sets and expertise within the PR field and get some clients on that side of my business. And so I started working with individuals and organizations that really needed help in publicizing their work, but also really understanding their brand and how to get it out there and develop relationships with their core audiences. And so I really selected projects that really spoke to what I was personally passionate about. So I've worked with a women's empowerment movement down there in Atlanta called She Speaks, and they were doing their very first conference at the time that I decided to branch off and do my own PR work. And so I was able to help them really establish their identity there and get some press, as well as handle their social media management as well. And I've worked with some entertainment clients as well. We have a very talented music scene here in Washington, D.C. And so I was helping them get their online presence situated. And I work with a former news anchor, in fact, Emmy Award-winning news anchor from Pittsburgh. And she's now a visibility and media strategist as well as a business coach. And so I'm helping her get her footing and getting speaking engagements and just making herself more visible to the audiences that she's trying to attract. So it's really a diverse group of clients, but all that I'm really passionate about.
It sounds like a lot of fun, and it sounds like every day you have something different to do, which is
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, indeed.
All right, so briefly, let's just touch this travel thing, and then I want to get into PR because I think it's so important for filmmakers, producers, anybody in the industry to really be able to brand themselves. And you have a new book that we will talk about. But in terms of travel, I mean, your Instagram, the IG thing is, like, just awesome. You're the people that we look at and we're like, dog, I wish I could go vacay.
Right. Yeah, well, I've been blessed to be able to turn that passion of travel into an enterprise, you know, and be able to make money from that. And, you know, it's really exciting to be able to help other people get started in the industry as well. As a home-based, what we call travelpreneur, you know, it is fun and exciting, but it's also still a business, and it's still a very lucrative one. And one of my goals and my passions is being able to help other people enter into that industry as well, because, I mean, who wouldn't want to have one of their passions, like travel, turn into an enterprise and something that you can actually make money from?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think this, the thing that's interesting about it, right, is because in this day and age, the world is so small, right? Because with social media, you know, you can actually have friends across the world, and
right,
you know, you meet friends across the world just from a picture that you took, right, on Instagram, and you posted it. So if you could talk a little bit about that, how you can turn something that you love into a business with travel, like that's pretty awesome.
It is awesome, and it's in an industry that everybody loves to talk about. They love posting their pictures of where they want to go and where they've come back from, or right there in the moment while they're there. And so it's such an easy thing to talk about that I find myself not even having to do a lot of advertising and promotion for that side of my business, because somebody always wants to go somewhere. And the blessing is, you know, once they go and they have a great time, then they use word of mouth marketing to tell their friends and their family members about it. So I would say more than half my business right now comes from referrals, people who have taken a vacation with me or I booked one of their trips, and then they told one of their friends or family members or associates about it, and I've gotten business that way as well.
So really quickly, for those that are listening, let's say I'm, you know, I'd like to travel, and I love traveling. I want to turn this into a business. How can people reach out to you, or how? What's the action steps?
Absolutely. Well, the best way is to go to goldenlifeventures.com. My contact information is there, as well as my social media profiles. I'm very active on my social media. I have an intern, but she hasn't even touched any of my social media because, you know, I still like it to be in my own voice and something that comes directly from me, you know.
Right.
So definitely you can contact me through the website, but also I'm on Instagram at Golden Life Ventures, as well as on Facebook at Golden Life Ventures as well, facebook.com/Golden Life Ventures, as well as Twitter at I Am Golden Life. So those are all the places to reach me. And of course, you have access to the links to all of those social media profiles on my website, goldenlifeventures.com.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the woman that's living her life like it's golden. Founder and CEO of Golden Life Ventures, LLC, Leslie Green. All right, Leslie, so let's kind of bring this thing on home. Public relations, PR, that's something that I think we could all use in life, especially if you're trying to go into the public, whether it's as filmmakers, you know, we want people to actually see our films, right? Or you could just be trying to, you know, be an entrepreneur, start your own business. You want clients. You want people that'll actually patronize whatever you're trying to accomplish. So.
That's right.
You have a new book. Please talk about that. And then also just talk about Teach Me PR 101 and how it's really important for people to have that in their life.
Absolutely. And, you know, over the course of my 10 years in business, starting Golden Life Ventures, but also just in the last year and a half, I've come across a lot of entrepreneurs and self-employed professionals, specifically those who are in the music and entertainment industry, and aspiring business owners who really need and want public relations services. And honestly, some of them don't even know what PR really is. But I found that instead of selling myself short and perhaps lowering my rates for the services that I provide for them, I said, why not just create a course where I could teach them how to do the basics of public relations? Because it's still needed. They still deserve to have this knowledge and these resources. And so that was the genesis of PR 101. And as I was coming up with the content for the course, the business coach that I was working with said, you know what, Leslie, this needs to be a book as well. You need to give people access, specifically for those who may not invest in the course, but they'll read the book.
Yeah.
And so that's how Teach Me PR 101 came about. That's the supplemental book that comes with the course. So, of course, if you invest in the course, you're able to get the book for free. But you know, it's really, I think, a great resource for people, especially those who may not look at themselves as entrepreneurs, those of us who may be in the music and entertainment industry, and we're musicians, we're artists, we're self-employed professionals, but at the same time, we're also entrepreneurs, we're also business owners, because we have to manage our brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important if we want to be successful and if we want to have brand loyalty, where there's so many other competing forces out here, that we make ourselves special, right? We make ourselves, you know, noticeable to those people who we are looking to attract. And so that's what PR is all about. It's funny. As I was developing the content for the course, I realized that there are a lot of people who confuse public relations with advertising and branding and marketing, and they all fall under the communication spectrum, but it's different, right? And that's one of the things that I teach in my course and the book, is how to distinguish between all of those things and how they work together and how they intersect.
Gotcha. You know, I think one of the things that's difficult, just from like a filmmaking perspective, and even as maybe like the host of Picture Lock and everything like that, is building an audience.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? And I think in some ways, you know, one, I'm going to ask you, you know, do you cover that in the course? But
In some ways, I feel like it's not necessarily like a A to Z type of thing. It's like doing many different things and, mm-hmm. and keeping an authentic voice that allows you to do that. Is that accurate or?
Absolutely. And it's not just building the audience, which is hard enough, but it's also maintaining that audience as well.
Right.
You know, because we have so many things to look at, especially in the age of social media. Where there's tons of things that are competing for our attention. So it's really, as I said before, about establishing that brand loyalty that I talk about in the course and, you know, as well as, of course, putting yourself out there, making yourself visible to new audiences. But this is all a part of what PR is and, you know, how you can not just publicize yourself, but make yourself stay relevant in the eyes of the people that you want to attract.
All right, so I'm sitting on the edge. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to goldenlifeinsurance.com, but I'm not quite sure if I want to, you know, take this course and, you know, all that good stuff. Could you give, like, one, I'll limit it to one good nugget for anyone that is trying to build brand loyalty and build their own brand? Sell it, Leslie.
Well, you know, I'll share with you that when people think about public relations, the first thing that comes to their mind, for the most part, is media relations. How do I get myself, you know, on that big splash for the New York Post or the Washington Post or New York Times, right? Mm-hmm. Well, public relations is about so much more than media relations. Yes, that's a big piece of it. But when you think about what it takes for you to engage and build a relationship with your audiences, which is what public relations is, right? Relations is in the name of it. So it's about building those relationships with the people that you want to service and you want to support with your product or your brand. And in doing that, there are a number of PR strategies that I talk about in the book, but the first five that I really focus on, one of those is earned media, but the other things is social media, as well as email, newsletter engagement. This is one of the most underutilized PR tools in the industry. But yes, people do still read their emails. And if you can provide some type of value, right, uh-huh. some type of value to the people in your core audiences, not selling them on something, not marketing something, but maybe educating and informing them on something, they will love you for life and they will continue to come back to you for content. And that's what separates you from your competitors out there.
Sweet. All right. Leslie Green, CEO and founder of Golden Life Ventures. I really appreciate you coming on Picture Lock. And I want to invest in this course. This is something I need in my life.
Yes, indeed. And for those who are interested in the course and perhaps getting some free PR tips emailed to you every single week as well, you can go to my course landing page, which is masterprbasics.com. Again, that's masterprbasics.com.
All right. And before you get out of here, how can people find you, social media, all that good stuff?
Yep. Again, you can go to, for Facebook, I'm at Golden Life Ventures, as well as on Instagram, same profile, Golden Life Ventures. And you can find me on Twitter at I Am Golden Life. Again, I Am Golden Life.
All right, Leslie, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. It was so great speaking with you. I was glad to be here.
Let's take a quick break for promos. Stay tuned.
For you, the listeners of Picture Lock's podcast, Gamefly is offering a premium free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I used to play PlayStation a ton pre-kids. I had money to buy the latest game out, but I really don't have the time or money like I used to give towards my hobby. That's why Gamefly makes so much sense. For a low monthly fee, I can get the latest console and handheld game delivered to my door. I keep it as long as I want and can send it right back to get a new one. The cool thing is, if you like a game so much that you don't want to send it back, you can keep it for a low used price. There are never any due dates or late fees. To get your free trial today, go to gameflyoffer.com/picturelock. Again, that's gameflyoffer.com/picturelock for your free 30-day trial.
Hey, everybody, this is filmmaker Joe Carabello. You are listening to the best show in the whole entire planet, Picture Lock. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. And my next guest is just a DMV all-star in this filmmaking game. He's a producer and writer known for Cap South, Muck, which we'll talk about today, and Hill People. Rob Rafferty, welcome to Picture Lock.
It's a pleasure to be here, Kevin. And I got to say, props to Arlington Independent Media. I probably, you know, first came in the doors here, I don't know, 10 plus years ago. And it's really fun to remember how this place inspired me to continue down this path of creative filmmaking.
That's an amazing, true story, before we started rolling tape, Paula Valley, executive director, he came in and I was like, "Hell, this is Rob, the Paul. Oh, we know each other." So yeah, tell me a little bit about this, you know, because I'm interested. I think a lot of people that I know in the DMV filmmaking community have come through Arlington Independent Media and done more things.
Yeah, so I'm originally from West Virginia, rural America, grew up in the 80s, didn't have access to a lot of video equipment for sure. At best, I would have like an instant camera or something like that. But I always had that interest and fascination with film. Didn't really get into it until later in my sort of adult life. I'm a lawyer by training, so I'm about 26, 27 years old, moved to Arlington, Virginia. Hey, what's this place called Arlington Independent Media? I just walk in, check it out. They have all sorts of classes, gear, equipment. It's better equipped than I think many professional studios across the country. I was blown away. And of course, they have a staff that helps train and educate the local residents. So I just kind of jumped right in without any background. And within a few years, I was, you know, volunteering on projects. And then I started producing my own things and networking, meeting all sorts of local artists. And it's kind of just snowballed from there. But it definitely all goes back to Arlington Independent Media. So it's fun to kind of be back where it all started, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. Man, I think that that's something that I agree with wholeheartedly. Because even for me, you know, I started out Picture Lock, it was a blog, and then I came here to work, and then I was like, well, does anybody have a film review TV show? You know, and no, it wasn't one, or they had been one, like, but it was a while back. So that's how I kind of started the TV portion. And then I would always cut, you know, the audio, make the podcast, and then we have WERA came on board. And so, yeah, I can't agree with you more. Like, this is a great place to kind of cut your teeth. In such a way where, you know, a big budget isn't on the line, you know, you have crew that you can call upon to actually work on your show or your movie or whatever the case may be.
It's fantastic. It's a great resource. And I couldn't encourage enough to anyone that's interested. You don't have to be, you know, an expert or even have any knowledge. They'll show you how things work and you'll learn a ton. And it was just fascinating, you know, to get into a studio environment and see the editors at work in a live shoot, you know, things that you take for granted as a consumer of media.
Yeah.
I love television. I love movies. But, you know, kind of getting behind the curtain and seeing the editing process, lighting, all the miking, audio. I mean, it's just so much work and an enormous team of people that are involved in anything. So it's been a really a pleasure to, you know, I guess, chase that dream.
Yeah.
starting through this you know, this local resource, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. So I appreciate you kind of giving us a starting point now in terms of your history. Mm-hmm. So take us back kind of to the beginning. We'll make our way up to Muck. Cap South.
Sure. Cap South is probably around 2012, 2013. It is the result of, I would say, 5 or 6 years of various smaller productions. Cap South itself is I think it's an 11-episode web series with all sorts of bells and whistles, a lot of fun. And, it, you know, had a great time, local casting, volunteers, a lot of friends involved. It's a story of sort of a dysfunctional congressional office on the Hill. It's sort of like Veep on Capitol Hill focused on the staffers, and really had a great time making that. But that itself was, again, like the result of many, many efforts, starting and stopping and experimenting. You mentioned in my bio, it was funny, you mentioned Hill People. not necessarily one of my best works, but it was fun. Kind of an earlier version of Cap South, but I didn't have any actors except myself and some kitchen appliances that were playing the other characters. It was a little out there. My experimental years, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah, like, again, I started getting interested in film. I started coming to AIM, taking classes. About that time, Google Video, YouTube comes online. And suddenly, the audience isn't just confined to who's physically proximate. It's the whole world, you know? Mm-hmm. You can put anyone with any creative idea can upload it and share it with the rest of the planet. That's pretty remarkable. So I think I've really benefited and enjoyed that opportunity. And there's no way, I tell this to people, there's no way a guy like me would have had the opportunity to do the things I've done without this type of immense technological progress we've had over time, the digital era. I'm sort of one of these people that kind of came at it later in life. And I'm happy. I think it's a thrill. There's a ton of content. It's very competitive. And how do you monetize? That's a real big challenge. No one's really quite figured that out. But from my standpoint, you know, there's never been a better time to be an artist. You can do so much if you have an idea. You just got to get off, get motivated and do it.
Yeah, get off your butt.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
So, no, I you know, one of the things that I kind of wanted to ask you, just in terms of Cap South, what is it that about, like, being in this area, maybe in government, because we'll move into district land, that really kind of attracts you to that type of material? Like, were you a big fan of, like, all the different on the Hill, like, what was the West Wing?
West Wing, yeah. Like that was a show in the 90s I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin, a really amazing writer, obviously.
Sorkin is the man.
He is the man. So, but there's a really long tradition of political TV shows beyond that. And, you know, D.C. is, for better or worse, it's what it is. It's the nation's capital. It's really the world. It's the heart of democracy for the planet. So people that come here are often drawn, I believe, to, you know, do good and, you know, make the world a better place. And obviously a lot of different perspectives on how to do that. But I think a lot of people initially work in or for the government in some way. And I'm not exclusive from that. I came here and I worked on Capitol Hill for a little bit. Maybe that's where I got some of the ideas for Cap South, the sort of thinking of that environment as ripe for comedy because there's so much silliness that goes on in politics these days. yeah, no one knows that. But, but yeah, I think it's not uncommon for anybody in this area to at least have some sense or interest in the governing process, and I feel like a lot of young people are here working in that in some way or another. And even if you're in the private sector, just because you're in D.C., I think you know people who work in government or politics or on the Hill. So it seems to be like you're absorbed in that environment, you know.
Yeah, you're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the guy who believes Washington, D.C. is the heart of democracy. When you said that just now, it blew my mind. Rob Rafferty.
I like to think positively about what we represent to the world. I know this is a very trying time for different reasons. What I simply mean is, you know, I think America is still important in the world and the decisions we make here matter. And to some extent, we set an example for better or worse for the rest of the world. And yeah, you look in the picturesque scenery at D.C., you got the Capitol building, the White House, it's all there, right? This is our seat of government.
Yeah.
And it ebbs and flows. No one's always going to be happy with who's in or who's out, but hopefully we persevere and make it through.
Yeah. No, in no way was I judging you. I thought, you know, that's amazing because sometimes, like, we wake up each day, we metro or ride into work and we see the monuments and we see the Capitol and all this kind of stuff. But it's just like, oh, we live here. You know what I mean? And when you stop and you sit back and you think about it, yeah, you're right.
It's fun. It's a great city to live in. And I'm like many locals who take it for granted. I don't get into the city nearly as much as I should. But whenever my friends are visiting or my family's visiting, we got
to
make that.
Let's go to the museum. Yeah. The new African American Museum is like the draw.
Isn't it like a waiting list?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to go there so badly. I heard it's an amazing experience, but it's just like you have to be on the list for months.
Yeah. We jumped on it early. We got to go. It's beautiful. Awesome. But let's get back to you.
All right.
So, you know, I'm gonna put I'm going to switch things up a bit because District Land, you know, came after Muck, but I want to focus more on Muck. So let's talk about District Land.
Sure. That's written and produced by a guy named Russell Max Simon. He's a local filmmaker, lives out in Silver Spring, Maryland. I met Russell through his partner who works at the D.C. Independent Film Festival. I served on a panel there at her request to talk about Cap South, in fact, talk about web series creation, and got to meet him through her, and we kind of hit it off. We both have similar interests, passions for writing and art, and this was his idea. So District Land is Russell's baby. He wanted to make a show that was set in D.C., but not about politics, you know, that looks explores millennials in a different lens and some of the challenges they're facing. And I thought it was a pretty compelling idea. I tried to help him out with some of the drafts of the first script of the pilot episode and you know, give him feedback and support along the way. So I was, I think, given a production credit on that. And it was real fun to see that evolve over time and take shape. And but yeah, that's had some success. Russell was he won the Best Writing Award at the Independent Television Festival up in Vermont last fall for District Land. So it's getting some, you know, positive feedback, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, and those that are listening, if you check Picture Lock episode 42, so this is when more heavily focused on the TV, but you can listen to the podcast, and I talked to Russell Max Simon about District Land and all that good stuff, which it looked like a really fun, you know, web series, but it kind of, in some ways, it seems it makes sense that you guys would partner with Cap South, District Land, you know.
They have similarities. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that they're both set in Washington, D.C.
I like that. You know, they got people in it. There's like white people, black people in it.
They're using this picturesque city as a backdrop for the story. But yeah, Cap South is a real spoofy, silly, zany comedy, almost like the movie's Airplane or something, where it's over the top and nonsensical and silly. I think District Land is a little more serious. Actually, it's a lot more serious.
Right.
I'm sure Russell talked about that with you on the show. He's trying to explore some of the deeper themes about, you know, cultural challenges and gentrification and like real issues that are impacting people here in the area. So I didn't do any of that with Cap South. It was just silly, trying to get some yucks. But yeah, District Land's, I think, a little deeper, and that's cool. You know, I'm happy to be involved in that sort of thing every once in a while.
Right, exactly. I think what it is, or what I was trying to get at, is the fact that we live in this area, we're engrossed in it every day, and so it's kind of like your take on what's going on in the area, you know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely. And there's just, anyone that lives here knows it. You look around, it's there's drama and there's comedy and there's everything in between. You
know? Exactly. All right, you're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to writer, director, producer extraordinaire Rob Rafferty. So, Rob, let's get into Muck. This is a pretty, I think it's a bold thing to do. You're taking like a podcast, video in terms of like a web series. You're putting it all together. If you could, just let the audience know what Muck is all about and then we'll get into it.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, Muck is an experiment in multi-platform storytelling. It contains 5 video episodes, webisodes, and a podcast miniseries that depict the story of an investigative news journalist from Washington, D.C. on a missing person cold case investigation in rural West Virginia. So he's out of his element, he's in over his head, and he's deep in the muck, right? Right. Like a young muckraking journalist of sorts. That's the idea. And it's through the lens of a podcast. So while in the video episodes, we see the journalist, Albert is his name, we see Albert, you know, investigating this missing person case that, you know, from some 20 years ago, talking to individuals who were either witnesses or suspects at the time of the disappearance. While we see that in the video, we hear his ultimate story that he tells in the podcast. So it's one story. Muck is one story told over 2 platforms. The content is complementary, at times contradictory, and hopefully, you know, at the end of it all, sort of entertaining and thought-provoking. And it definitely, I appreciate your compliments. It is it was an experiment just trying to play around with the different forms of technology we have, not just to do a video series, but also to throw in an audio podcast and blend the two in some deliberate way.
Yeah.
I'd say that it was very important for me to make sure that both the web series and the podcast would be independently interesting and entertaining.
Uh-huh.
So you could consume either of them or both of them. I think it works well when you do it in the sequence that I've provided on YouTube. But people could listen to it in any order, really, and hopefully still glean the story and get some sense of the arc of the character, the sort of the mystery that underlies the whole show.
Right. I'm really interested, just as a creator, why you chose to split between the different mediums and, like, what so far has reception been? Because, you know, I think podcasts rule these days. And I was one of those people, like, when I think about it, like, I've been listening to podcasts for, like, 11 years, you know? But, like, now it's kind of, like, really hitting the big time in podcasts like Serial and things like that. But with what you're doing, it kind of, I wouldn't say forces you, but if you want to get the best experience, you have to listen to the podcast and then actually go to YouTube and watch it. So, like, as a creator, you know, why did you want to do that?
Well, you brought the show Serial. That really, like, hit the nail right on the head, because I didn't have a deep understanding of the podcast world until that show came out. It was one that became a breakthrough hit. So that introduced me to this whole universe of storytelling that was out there, both nonfiction like Serial and fictional stories, of course, and then all sorts of interviews and other great shows. And that's been fun, just learning about that whole world that exists. It also seems like there's so much, there's such an abundance of content. You know, what shows do you listen to? We were talking earlier about, you know, what shows do you watch on TV now? There's so many, it's hard to even keep track of them all. Similar with podcasts. In any event, Serial was a great story, and it was based on a true investigation. I thought that was fascinating. But what interested me the most about Miss Koenig, the investigator, was the way that she wove this story in a manner. It was an investigation. I'm not sure if you may have listened to it. Maybe some of the listeners have, and it's an old investigation from the 90s about a gentleman who may have been wrongly convicted of murder. And she's, you know, interviewing him while he's in prison, and there are some really dark issues involved in race and police abuse and other things that may have occurred. So it's definitely adult material, adult content, very highly dramatic story. But at the end of each episode, she totally, hooks you. You got to come back and watch the next episode, right? I mean, it's very compelling storytelling. And this got me thinking, how much of Serial is really rooted in fact and fact-finding and journalism versus telling a great story, packaging content for your listening audience,
right,
making them come back for more in a kind of kind of commercial way, right? And as much as I enjoyed that show and as a consumer, like, I listened to all of it, I started wondering, it just raises interesting questions about the lines between news and reporting and journalism versus sensationalism or storytelling or weaving a tale for the sake of dramatic hooks for your audience.
Right.
So that was what kind of sparked my interest in this idea of Muck. And by the way, my kind of co-creator, his name's Travis Edwards. He's a local videographer who I work with a lot of, on many projects. He helped me flesh out the story beats. I ultimately wrote the script. But we were both we found it very compelling, this idea of a brash young investigative journalist from D.C. who's on a location, and it's his first time into a rural kind of Appalachia, stereotypical small town environment. He's kind of out of his element. And how was someone in that those circumstances engaged locals in the community to ask them questions about something they might not want to bring up?
Yeah. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the writer, director, producer of Muck, Rob Rafferty. Rob, I think that what you're hitting on as well is, I think there's something in us that we all love a good mystery. And for the most part, I would, and maybe I'm just optimistic, like you said, but I would think that we all want to see justice prevail, right? And so in terms of Serial, and especially that first season, as she's presenting the facts, you're questioning things, you're thinking about it. And like you said, you want to find out, okay, well, what happened next? It's kind of like Making a Murderer on Netflix,
my gosh.
You know?
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
Right.
Whoa.
I think we can,
no, you sparked my interest there. The other one was on HBO, too, The Jinx. Did you ever see that?
I didn't get to see that, but I heard nothing but...
Unreal. And that's an extension of the same thing you're getting at. You know?
Exactly. Like,
we want justice. We want the truth. But it's told to us in bits and pieces. And come back next week for the dramatic conclusion. And The Jinx was fascinating because at the end of that show, they reveal that he allegedly makes some confessions and he's mic'd up. He's a hot mic situation and he says some things in the bathroom. And that leads to him getting arrested. It's like, whoa, the next day after that, after the season finale of a, you know, HBO television show, the subject of that documentary is arrested. And it's like, wow, this is a creative enterprise. It's a documentary film that now has a real world impact in that guy's life in a pretty compelling way. And similarly, Serial, like you said, we're kind of the quest for justice. She raises interesting kind of, I guess, pokes holes in the theory of the prosecution, a pretty substantial one. And actually leads to this, I believe, I haven't followed it lately, but I think there was some effort to try to retry that case.
Yeah, I definitely think it got as far as that, at least, if not more.
Yeah, I need to check in. I mean, but it's fascinating. Like, this is an interesting world where that type of reporting and storytelling, really, it's great storytelling, leads to maybe a more just outcome. And without that, would this have ever happened without that story? No way, right?
Same thing with Making a Murderer. I think his nephew was able to, I think he got released recently, right? So the whole point being that as storytellers, I think, and I've always felt this way, such a huge, in terms of film, the things that you can do. You know, like, people love it. And that's the biggest thing is this. It's with Making a Murderer, let's just say, for that, right? If you made that and this just showed it in your mom's basement, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the thing that made that so hot was it went up on Netflix. It kind of was just, it was really went up, no big fanfare. And then people caught on and it spread like wildfire. And so as it seems like it's kind of a theme that we've been talking about here today is this new digital medium where the world is actually so much smaller and you could do so much, which is amazing.
It is amazing. It's fun. And I tried to, you know, explore some of that in Muck and hope that it would tap into that interest. I think I think what's missing in a sense, or what makes mine different, is it's an entirely fictitious story. So maybe these stories are more compelling if they're based in fact, and that there is a real stake. There's a guy in jail who may have been wrongly convicted.
Right.
Or there's someone who hasn't been convicted of a crime they commit. Right. That was The Jinx. So it's like those are real compelling stakes because they're real people. Muck is a totally fictitious story. So maybe that's why it's not quite yet, you know, caught on buzz as other ones have. But like I said, it's a learning process for me. I'm really proud of what I've put together. And it's had a sort of successful life on the festival circuit. And I've really enjoyed everything I do. I always think about learning from the process and just trying to get better for the next project. Get ready for the next thing, you know?
Well, listen, you have a lot to be proud of. Rob Rafferty, writer, director, producer of Muck. I really do appreciate you coming on the show. And, you know, hopefully let's let the Picture Lock fans be the judge. Let people know how they can find Muck, how they can find you. And hopefully we'll hear some feedback about this.
I'd love it. I'd love any and all feedback, praise, criticism, and everything in between. So it's all up online at welcometothemuck.com. There's a lot of information and backstory and, you know, like shoots from the pictures from the table read and things like that. It's kind of a fun interactive website. Then you can learn more about me at my homepage, robrafferty.com. So it's RobRafferty.com. All my content's up there, even the stuff I did 10 years ago, which maybe should be taken down. But I like to leave it up as a reminder of how far I've come. Yeah, man, you got to see that.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. You know, at my home, there's some posters of, like, basically the posters I made for my first documentary before I went to grad school. You know, the stuff is, like, if I watch it now, you know, I kind of want to curl up and, like, oh, that is horrible. But you gotta do that, right? That's where you came from. And if you didn't have some kind of start, you wouldn't be where you are now, so.
Man, we have a lot in common.
We do, man. You gotta come back on the show! Rob Rafferty!
Anytime, Kevin. Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming on. That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Leslie Green and Rob Rafferty, for coming on the show. You can find links to their work on the podcast. Speaking of podcasts, you can download this one in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Feel free to give the show a hearty review if you're enjoying it. I appreciate that. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope. All social media is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/picturelockshow. And don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. In fact, if you get on picturelockshow.com/screenings right now, you have the opportunity to get free passes to see Boss Baby tomorrow, Saturday, March 24th. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website. Drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by Mike S. The Prophet 13. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film. Ride sharing is all the rave these days. Wherever you're headed, count on Lyft for rides in minutes. Whether you're riding solo or with friends, with Lyft, you've got options. Get picked up by one of their drivers who will get you where you need to go. When the ride ends, just pay and rate your driver through your phone. It's quick, it's easy, and just a couple taps away. Visit Lyft.com for more details. And if you haven't tried Lyft yet, but want to give it a whirl with a $50 ride credit, sign up at Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow. That's right. If you're a new member to Lyft and in an eligible market, you can get a $50 ride credit with Picture Lock. Again, that's Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow for a free $50 ride credit.